Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed, this is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. Today I'm joined by Mark Foster, a six-time world champion and Olympic swimmer, known for his speed and resilience. Mark has also become a powerful advocate for LGBTQ plus rights and a motivational speaker. Let's explore the skills behind his remarkable journey. Hi, Mark.
Morning.
Good morning. The morning after the night before.
Yeah, no, it's a great night. It's lovely sort of going to events where, I mean, you're rewarding excellence, but it's more about, you know, what people have done.
Yeah.
And I think the nice thing is they get to bring their parents along. When my mum came to watch me swim, it was brilliant because the bottom line is she didn't see me doing all the training.
Yeah.
She just saw the finished product. So last night, all those parents are wondering how their kids are getting on, and all of a sudden they've been given an award.
Yeah.
They kind of go, wow, they must be doing really, really good then. So it was a really proud moment for them to share with their parents.
Yeah, and thank you so much for travelling and being our guest speaker.
That's right.
Because this week is National Apprenticeship Week 2025.
Yep.
And you came and we celebrated with parents, students, governors, staff and stakeholders, the achievements of a lot of our students. And it was a really beautiful night, wasn't
lovely
it?
Lovely evening.
And
lovely
you
evening.
Gave such an inspirational speech and really setting the scene for today and this
cool.
conversation today. But, you know, as my hero of when I was watching the Olympics when I was younger, the first question that I've really got to ask to you is, you competed in five Olympics, and how did you adapt the skills to stay competitive over two decades?
I think, first of all, I felt very fortunate doing what I was doing. As a kid, like most kids, I learned to swim. I enjoyed being in the water. Then my mates swam. So it was a place where if I wanted to hang out with my mates, I went training. I happened to be good at it. I started representing my country. At 11 years of age, I saw the Olympics on TV and I thought, I want to go to the Olympics. I want to become an Olympic champion. There's 300,000 registered kids in the UK, and they've all kind of not all got the same dream and aspirations because, you know, some are better than others, but only 30 to 35 people every 4 years get to represent Britain at the Olympic Games. I didn't know those stats and figures. I just saw the Olympic Games. I saw a guy called Duncan Gudju, and that's kind of where my goal and focus started. So then when I got there to my first Olympics at 18 years of age in Seoul in 1988, I felt a privilege and an honour, and it was like a rabbit in headlights. It was like, oh my God, this is the Olympic Games. This is what I've been wanting to do all my life. I came 24th in one race, and we came fourth in a relay. So I just missed out on the medal in 1988. And on the back of that, I came home. There was no money in swimming. I didn't get into swimming for money. I got into it for the love and the joy and my peer group. I worked as a career driver, fitted double glazing windows, groundsman, lifeguard. I did various jobs to make ends meet so I could still swim. And I nearly retired over a three-year period. And then a family friend sponsored me for 1 year before the 92 Olympics. I got back in. I came sixth. Speedo sponsored me. And all of a sudden, swimming became my job. And I kind of went, hang on, I'm doing something that I love doing and I'm really passionate about. And all of a sudden, I'm now paid to do it. And was I paid a huge amount of money? No, absolutely not. But it sort of enabled me to make ends meet while I followed that career path. And then I got better and better, won world championships, broke world records, and then I earned a few quid. But at the end, my resilience was wanting to become Olympic champion. That was the drive and the motivation. Never got there, but then won six world championships, 11 European championships, and other bits and pieces by having that focus. And I felt that I was very lucky to do something that I saw was my hobby that became my job. The only downside is at some point your body goes, I can't do this anymore, and you retire and you recreate yourself. So my resilience was more that, I don't know, I was just focused on trying to become Olympic champion.
Yeah. Can you remember that exact time when you had that spark and that passion for swimming? Was there like a light bulb moment one day or in a place?
No, I think it was probably, I always enjoyed being in the water. And I think when people learn to swim, I'm not saying it's not for everybody, obviously, but when people get in the water at first and they learn to float, push off, go underneath the water, it's a fun place.
Yeah.
But the light bulb moment was probably, there were two things. One, seeing the Olympic Games on TV. I played county basketball, football, tennis, cricket. I was very, very sporty. But my sport chose me that I happened to be very, very good at swimming. I was good at everything else, but I was great at swimming. I saw the Olympics on TV and I saw Duncan Gudju win that Olympic gold medal, and I thought, I swim, this guy swims, and it's on the TV. You never saw swimming on the TV. It's not a high-profile sport. There was that little moment, And he came along to my swim club and I saw his Olympic gold medal. I saw what he'd achieved. I saw what he could do in the water. And then winning my first national age groups at 11 when I became the fastest swimmer in the UK, which happened to be the fastest swimmer in the world at the time for 11-year-olds. I thought, I'm pretty good at this. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it anyway. But then, I don't know, if I had 10 friends, they all swam. Yeah. So that was the thing. We all did something together that we all enjoyed. I found my tribe, in a sense, my mates that did the same thing as me.
Yeah. And can you define a moment when you thought, yes, I can do this and I'm going to get right to the top?
I'm trying to think. So after First Olympics, 18, First Olympics, I came back, I knew I was good, but then it was never a career. It was never going to be a career because it was kind of like there was no money. And then, as I say, I had part-time jobs, making ends meet, going to the 92 Olympics, coming sixth, coming back, Speedo giving me some money. And I thought, hang on, I'm being paid to do something I love doing. That was a weird feeling. Yeah. But 1 year later, I went to the World Championships in Palma, Mallorca, and I won. And I broke the world record that year as well. And I suddenly thought, I'm really good at this. And I just then, when more sponsors came on board, and I just thought, this is amazing. I mean, not just to be the best at something, but it was more of a, I don't know, that I could pursue this career and this love and this passion. Whereas before it was kind of like, well, at some point you're going to go and work on a building site, you're going to become a coach. I'm not someone that can sit, and all the other jobs that I did do along the way to make ends meet, lifeguarding, you know, I worked in a building site lifting plasterboards around. I loved moving. So I didn't mind what I was doing because I was learning something and I was moving in my, you know, I'm a mover.
Yeah.
I'm not a sitter. So that was a good lesson for me to know that, okay, if this doesn't work out, I can go and do those things because I found them interesting.
And you talked a lot about setbacks or failures. I don't think you called them failures. And, you know, the world of swimming and the world of sport is so, so competitive, isn't it? So there must have been setbacks or things that didn't go so right.
Sport is a little bit like life, as in, you know, it's not plain sailing. There's lots of ups and downs. You have your highs, you have your lows. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about sport is it gives you life lessons without realising you're getting life lessons. So, yeah, it was kind of, I had some great moments. I won lots of championships, broke lots of records. But I had some low moments as well, as in, you know, performance-wise, things didn't go to plan. And I think the thing is, I learned more from when it didn't go right.
Yeah.
And what you get constantly with sport is feedback, especially with a sport against times. When you touch the wall, you look up, you see the scoreboard and you kind of go, I knew what my best time was before every race. So I knew where my great swim line was. And then did it go okay? Did it go bad? Did it go indifferent? And then you sit down with a coach and you have the feedback. You see not necessarily what you did wrong in the race. There might be a bit of that, but it was more about the training leading up to the race. So you try different things and you get different results. And from what you say there, my thing with failing, I don't think we fail at anything when we have a go. So I think the failing at something is not doing anything and staying stuck. Just not moving and overthinking and going, oh, I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to do. My thing is, with anything you do, do it. And then from action I learn. So think of the word fail. From action I learn. You do something and you get a result. It might not be the result you want, but you'll learn something. And then you go again, you do it slightly different, or you just try the same thing and you keep going. My thing is, I kept going until I got it right. But like I say, contradict myself a little bit. I never won the Olympic Games, but maybe I wasn't good enough to win the Olympic Games, but I won the World Championships, broke world record. So I was good. Just on a given day, once every 4 years, I didn't achieve my ultimate dream. But it never stopped me trying. And I was never afraid of failing because there was no fail. It was like, okay, do something, do the process, get a result, and then go again.
And that's really, really good advice for our listeners, because no life is perfect.
No.
And it is about what do we do when we get those setbacks. And that's what makes us even better. And that's how we learn, isn't it?
That's feedback.
Exactly. And it took me a long time to realise that as well.
But you get life feedback, don't you? The stuff that just yeah. happens to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you kind of go, oh, whether you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah.
Or there's feedback from people around you, which, let's face it, we've all got parents. And we don't like it when they give us feedback,
yeah.
right? Especially if we're hearing what we don't want to hear. So, of course, we shut down to it. But I think the thing is, it's like some of those old sayings, I'm trying to think of one now, that your parents or grandparents, or you heard people say certain things.
Yeah.
Oh, it comes out in the wash is a silly one. I'm just trying to think. But stuff that they say and you kind of go, what on earth are you talking about? And then when you get a little bit older, you kind of go, that makes perfect sense. Because you now, you get it. My mentor once said to me, you can't put a 40-year-old head on a 20-year-old's shoulders. And it's true, right? It's life experience.
Yeah.
And then when you kind of get there, it's not a question of you didn't know anything when you were younger, but it's kind of like you learn more as you get older.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this podcast, because it's about, as you gain experience, wisdom, life learning, it's about passing on that information to as many people as possible so they can have just the most fulfilled life they possibly can. And I think in today's society, in the landscape, that's really, really important.
Absolutely.
But swimming and that competitive side, I mean, that's a huge effect physically on your body and just a big effect on yourself mentally as well. So if we put those in sort of two different places, how did you have the resilience both physically and mentally? And how did it feel physically first? And then we'll go on to the mental side.
I think the physical side is any sports person or athlete, what you're doing every day is trying to push your body to another level in a weird way. You beat your body up for a living. Okay, so every day you get up, you're trying to push your 100% a tiny bit further, trying to lift a little bit more, trying to go a little bit faster. On other days, you're doing some drills and skills and other bits and pieces. But ultimately, the goal is to get faster. By doing that, you need to push your body to where it's never been before. Yeah. But I think the thing is, it's about creating habits. When you create a habit, that's just what you do, it's what you do. So you're not thinking, oh, this, you know, on given days, yeah, it's a really, really tiring session, but it's kind of like, well, yeah, but it's what I do. It's what I need to do to get to where I want to go to. So it just becomes part and parcel of that process. You're also quite fortunate being an athlete, which is you get physio, you get massage. I'm not saying a massage is like tickly-tickly. It's not as deep and it's quite hard. But, you know, you've got a setup and a foundation around you, which is all geared around making you a better athlete and faster athlete. And if you do hurt yourself, you get injuries, you've got people around you to fix you and put you better. And as I say, ultimately, you're doing something that you love and you enjoy doing. So you've got to think, how lucky am I?
Yeah.
So on those mornings when you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning going, well, this is horrendous. Everyone else in the world, or you think everybody else in the world is asleep and I'm getting up and I'm diving in freezing cold water for a couple of hours, blah, blah. I used to think, first of all, my mates were there with me, so I wasn't alone. I was sharing it with other people. And also, if I wanted to get somewhere, I knew I had to do a little bit of graft to get there. You know, nobody in any walk, unless you win the lottery, this is, you don't get somewhere without having to put the yards in. People don't learn to be a bricklayer without training to be a bricklayer.
Absolutely.
People don't be a pilot without doing the training. So, or a doctor. So you kind of go, well, this foundation work and this graft I do. So pushing myself and pushing my body was part of the process. I learned to like it. You learn to like some of the things you don't like doing because you know you need to, and then all of a sudden you learn to like them. And then mentally, I just thought I was fortunate. I think the thing is, through the whole process, I knew at some point it would finish.
Mm.
I didn't retire till 38 years of age because I love what I did, and I knew once I retired, I couldn't go back. There's no going back professionally. I can go back and I can swim, and I still swim now. But as a professional athlete and a professional swimmer, I couldn't do it anymore at some point. So while I was doing it along that road, especially when I got into my 30s, I went, this might be your last race. This could be your last year. Not that one year. It wasn't the end of the road. It wasn't going to be that far in front of me. But I knew at some point it was going to end. So I just enjoyed every day for what it was. I don't know. But again, that comes down to creating that neurological, whatever, I don't know. You just got to change your mindset and think, how fortunate am I? And it's one of those silly things, and I'm not going to get deep and meaningful, but, you know.
You can.
When things, that really happened to me. Okay, 2004, I'd have been 34. I trained with a guy called Ross Bailey.
Mm.
Ross Bailey was the up-and-coming Colin Jackson, an amazing hurdler, number two in the UK. He was going to be the next British sensation hurdler behind Colin Jackson. We trained with Colin Jackson. We all trained together in Bath. One day, I'm with him. He's got a nut allergy. I was with him. Long and the short of it is, we went for a sandwich. He had nuts in it. He had anaphylactic shock. And 3 days later, he died.
Oh, my goodness.
It was hideous. It was horrendous. It was a horrendous experience. But it was one of those, a very, very good friend of mine that's 21 years of age and is a beast, incredibly fit, fast, young human being that's going to go places,
wow,
is all of a sudden taken from us. And it's one of those, wow. And this is on extreme, but something can happen that quickly to somebody. You kind of go, when things are going bad or things aren't going right, you go, really, is it that bad?
Mm.
So it makes you reflect and put things in place.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad that I sort of delved a bit deeper, because in this world of perfection, when things go wrong, people think it's only happening to themselves. Mm. And it is about how we work on our inner self to cope with everything that's going to happen to us, because things are going to happen to us in life, aren't
Absolutely.
They? And it's about how we deal with it and
Absolutely.
How we can learn from it or maybe move through it.
Yeah. And people realising that experience to them is unique to them, but it's not unique to them, as it's happening to other people all the time. So it's then finding that there's, I say about finding your tribe, going, there's other people this has happened to that I can speak to if I need to speak to, or find stuff online or whatever else, and then kind of go, okay, I'm not alone.
Yeah. I love the line, find your tribe. And I go through that similar sort of thing. You are a product of the environment that you're in. Mm-hmm. And actually, my children did a lot of swimming when they were younger. And I know the 5 o'clock getting up in the morning. But actually, if your mates are with you and you've got your tribe with you, that's going to make such a mm-hmm. lot of difference, yeah. isn't it, really? Yeah. So I absolutely get that. And we talk about at work, product of the environment that we're in, mm-hmm. and being with like-minded people and having fun and empowering each other. So
absolutely.
That's really good.
And also, you're talking about there that you did it with your kids. When I started early morning training when I was, I think, 8 years of age. But the one big reflection for me was, okay, as much as I'm like, oh, Mum, please don't get me up in the morning, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
I'm like, take myself out of my way for a minute. What must my mum have been thinking? Yeah. My mum did, yeah. I did Monday to Friday, every morning, every week.
Yeah.
My mum, and it was her response, because she's an adult.
Yeah.
You know, she took responsibility.
Yeah.
She'd get me up at 5, breakfast 5:15, car 5:30, and I'd be at the pool from 6 till 8. And she'd be running around, whether she goes back doing ironings, sitting watching me. You know, and I had 2 sisters. So my mum's juggling and managing all this stuff with a life, with a job. And I'm kind of going, oh, 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 oh. But of course you
didn't realise that at the time, did you?
No, it's not one of those things as kids, you don't realise, you think money grows on trees. You're just not aware. You're not aware until you're aware. That's it.
Amazing. How do you look after yourself these days then? So what do you do to keep yourself fit at the moment?
I go back to habits. It's just clearly I enjoyed my job.
Yeah.
I still enjoy going to the gym. I'm still swimming. And my big passion now is golf.
Okay.
Play a lot of golf. So my thing is, okay, to play a lot of golf so I don't get injured and my body doesn't break down, then I need to be fit. I don't need to be an Olympic athlete. And I say to people, if you are an Olympic athlete, you're an Olympic athlete. But it's not about those extremes or a professional athlete. But it's realizing that I try and say to people, you know, get out of your head and get into your body, which is a lot of people, and especially with phones and stuff nowadays, we overthink and we overstimulate our brains.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, just getting outside. I mean, a big thing with friends is walking and talking. You know, if you walk and talk, it's amazing what you might share with people. And when you're vulnerable with other people, it's amazing what they might share with you.
Mm.
But with golf, it's 4 or 5 hours of walking and talking, fresh air, nature, competition. It kind of gives me in lots of ways. So the going to the gym bit, whereas an athlete, as I said before, I used to beat my body up for a living.
Yeah.
It's now, I do everything at 75%. So yes, I still lift weights and I still do a bit of cardio, but I don't go into the realms of where I might have a heart attack. I don't push myself that much because I don't have to. That was my job and that was my reason. Whereas now my reason is practice what you preach.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. I just love moving. And if I want to play golf and I want to play golf for a long time, it's just I need to be in the right shape to do it.
And I think that's a really good explanation because also your body does change as you get older, doesn't it? And keeping moving, keeping fit, keeping healthy. I mean, I do a lot of yoga, a lot of wild swimming, and I do lift weights as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that balance of weight training, but doing something that makes me more flexible is really, really important. So is it difficult for you of going from that competitive side and then keeping fit as you get older?
Well, firstly, and I mentioned about sayings, which you made me think of one then, which is use it or lose it.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like with muscle. If you don't do anything, and people will know this if they've broken their leg or something, when you take the cast off, your muscle's gone. So it's like use it or lose it. But by going in the gym, I make it fun again. Mm. I take the other half of me, or I go in there with friends.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm alone and I'll do Sudoku, I'll do other bits and pieces. But if you can make it a social thing, and what's my goal when I go in the gym? I'm not pushing myself.
Mm.
I don't have set goals of trying to lift more weight. I don't know. Anyone will tell you, it's like before you go, it's a bit like 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm going, really? Do I want to get in cold water? No, no, no. But when you come out, you get this whole sense of, I know your body's alive, your brain's awake and all the rest of it. But that whole, I'll tick that box. That was brilliant. I'm pleased I did it.
Yeah.
So it's just thinking about things and rephrasing things in different ways and thinking about it differently. And I think for anybody that struggles getting started with anything, if you start off with a tiny step and it's one step. And I know it's a silly analogy, but when you start off with one step and then you get used to that little step and then you go a little bit further, a little bit further, all of a sudden without realising it, you create this healthy habit or this habit. And it's not just about working out, whatever you choose to do. And all of a sudden you find yourself doing something and going, you're not even thinking anymore because it becomes a habit. I say to people, when I'm doing, I do a swim academy. I've been doing it for 11 years. And one of the big things I do with kids, which is, what does everybody do when they start the length? Whether they're diving in or they're pushing off, they push off. Right, push on. You've got to push off and you've got to streamline. But a streamline is very simple. It's very, very easy when it's done correctly. But you're not taught it at a very young age. You're just taught to push off. So I put them in the right streamline position, one hand on top of the other, and been like a pencil or an arrow. I use words to whatever they connect with. Yeah. And I get them to do it for the whole session. I have to keep prodding and poking and prodding and poking. By the end of the session, they're doing it. They're doing it good. That's one day. And I just said to them, when you go back to your home program and you swim up and down, I give them lots of stuff to think about. I said, on one day, think about that, think about that, think about that. And after a period of time, you won't think about it anymore because it just becomes a habit. And it's ingraining good habits. Like I always say to people, what's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? I don't want to know everybody's bedroom habits, but is the first thing you should do is in the night you sweat. I'm not saying you sweat and your bed's drenched, but you sweat. You lose water, you lose fluids. And our body's 80% fluid, so you should drink water first thing. So first thing I do before I have a coffee in the morning is I drink half a pint of water and then I'll have a coffee and then I start my day, et cetera, et cetera. But by doing that, or if other people want to create good habits, which is first thing in the morning when you wake up before thinking about it, which is the best thing to do because jumping in freezing cold water, like when I swam, I find myself in the water and go, oh, I'm here again because I've not thought about it, which is get up, go for a walk. Go around the block, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, however much time you can give it, go, wake yourself up and start in a positive way.
That's a like-minded soul. And there's a lot of research of that thinking. What you think as soon as you wake up in the morning sets you up for the rest of the day. And drinking water and thinking of something positive sets the scene, doesn't it?
And it's not about living like an Olympic athlete or a monk.
Yeah.
It's just certain things. And when you're doing certain things, then, exactly.
Yeah.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
So are you still doing the swimming academy now?
I did it up until just before the Olympics.
Yeah.
My big thing was with doing the swim academy. The swim academy is basically me doing a road show.
Yeah.
So I have Katie Sexton. She was a world champion in 2003. Her and I do the swimming pool sessions. I've got a lady called Ali that organises the whole thing and she was an ex-swimmer. She's a master swimmer. And then her husband, Rob, and Anthony are the two fitness guys. So we kind of do 2 hours in the water, 2 hours on land, and then I do a classroom session, going through dealing with nerves, foods to eat, race reparations, stories, stuff. It was a road show around the UK.
Okay.
So I kind of go anywhere from Essex to Luton to Nottingham to Manchester to Plymouth. We've been to Plymouth.
Yay!
Exeter. Twice a year I did this road show. And for me, it was when I was 11 and Duncan Goodhue turned up my swim club. I had that little moment, that little light bulb moment, which is, I want to be like Duncan Goodhue.
Yeah, it's that role model, isn't it?
And I just thought, if I can do it, I mentioned 30 to 35 Olympic swimmers go to Olympics every 4 years. So it's a very small, minute number, but there might have been one of them on the swim academy. But the bigger thing was, I knew from that day, and we took 60 kids a day over 5 days, so 300 kids over the week, and then we'd do it twice a year. But I knew from that day, without a shadow of a doubt, everyone in that pool would improve. I might improve them by 1/100th of a second. I'd improve some of the others by a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
But I knew when I went back to that competition at the weekend or the next month, it was about like making all those people realise you can be the best that you can be.
While I'm listening to you, it just brought me back to my childhood. And I remember sitting on the side of the pool with my children doing, you know, the swimming badges. So you had to do so many things and tick the list off so that you got into the next group.
Yeah.
And I stayed in the same group for such a long time because I don't know whether they still do it. But the black brick that you had
to
throw to the bottom of the deep end and you had to dive and get it.
Was that the bronze medallion?
Yes, it was.
And you couldn't get down there.
For ages I have this one thing that I couldn't just get ticked off this, to get into the next group. And you talked about last night, didn't you, that you were in the white squad and you were aspiring?
Yeah, when I first started swimming, I joined the club and I was in the white squad, the shallow end of the pool, because I just learned to swim.
Yeah.
So it was the safest place for me to be. And all the swimmers that had just passed. But I remember being at the back of the white lane at the shallow end of the pool and I remember looking to the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
And it was the black squad. And there were seven squads away, but they were bigger, they were faster, they were stronger. And in my head, they were just people I aspired to be like.
Yeah.
And, but it kind of dawned upon me that I was at the back of the white lane, and to get moved up into the yellow squad, it was like basically white, yellow, blue, green, red, up to this black squad. There were seven squads. And I just remember going, well, I need to get to the front of the white lane before I get pushed into the yellow lane. So I only swam once a week, and I just remember getting in there. I was 6 years of age, five, 6 years of age, and I just thought, I've got to try as hard as possible. Every week, I just pay attention, try as hard as possible to make it to the front of the lane, and that was by being faster than the person in front of me in the lane.
Yeah.
And then they'd go, oh, you go in front of them, you go in front of them. All of a sudden, I'm at the front of the lane, and then they go, okay, you're too good for this lane. You get pushed up to the next lane. Same process. Start at the back of the lane, make my way to the front of the lane, get moved up to the squads. And it took me till I was 11 years of age to make the black squad.
Got it.
And that was a little process. And by making the black squad, I became the fastest 11-year-old in the world. That was,
whoa,
that was
congratulations. So well done. So it's like staying motivated, isn't it, while things are challenging or things aren't going your way.
And breaking it down into small components. I wasn't thinking in the subconscious, I was thinking I want to make the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
That was the dream.
Yeah.
But that was so far away as a little 10, 11-year-old kid.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, well, it's steps, white squad, yellow squad, blue squad, green squad, red squad, black squad. And then every competition I went to, it was just trying to, okay, I came eighth, I came fourth, I came second, I came first. On my time, the ultimate feedback, and it's very easy for me to say as a swimmer, when you touch the wall, you've got a time. So it didn't matter what anybody else did.
Mm.
Yes, I wanted to beat them, but no matter what they did, no matter what I did, swimming's a non-contact sport. I've just got my lane lines. There's my feedback. Was it good? Was it okay? Was it great? And I go, okay, well, let's learn from that. Let's go again.
Mm. And you know, when you're that focused, and obviously you're focused to win, and obviously it is a solo sport in that way, can you feel or see anything that's around you, or are you just absolutely focused in getting to the end of where you've got to get to?
You see your peripheral vision. When your head's in the water, I could see the people either side of me. You can either see the hand go underneath the water. You can feel a bit of splash.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're ahead of me, you don't feel anything, you're away. But you can see here. You can't see. If I was in lane one, for argument's sake, and I'd only really see two.
Yeah.
Unless when I pushed off and I turned, I looked across the pool, which is not a good, which I did as a kid, obviously, because you're learning. But
you'd lose time then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you're just slowing yourself down and nobody else. One of my big lessons for that was I learned lots of lessons through sport. On one occasion, I was a bit older at this point, I was probably 25, maybe 28, 29 or something.
Mm.
And my nemesis was a guy called Alexander Popov. He was a Russian swimmer. I say to people, he never popped off. He never went away. And he was unbeaten from 91 to 2000.
Yeah.
In major,
I remember him,
major competitions, he lost one race.
Yeah.
I mean, he was awesome. And I beat him in lots of other competitions, but not in the big major competitions. Big competitions, but not the big majors. And I remember one occasion, he got stabbed in Russia. There was something linked to the KGB, or so they said. Anyway, he got stabbed and he was out for about a year and he came back. And of course, while he was away, I was winning things. I wasn't coming second. He was phenomenal to watch. He's one of those, like a Usain Bolt, someone that just took the sport to another level. And I remember when he came back and I was in Zagreb in Croatia, an international meet called the Golden Bear Meet. And he came back and I was, oh, you're back. Good to see you. And we got on really well. When we got in the water, we wanted to kill each other. But outside the water, it was like we kind of went through the same things and pushed ourselves. So there's a mutual respect.
Yeah.
So I was in lane two, and he was in lane five for the final. Bearing in mind, I haven't raced him now for a year, year and a half. And he was always my gauge, that nemesis, that little moment. Always wanted to beat him. And the race started, and at 15 metres, I looked under my arm to see where he was, and we were side by side. Bearing in mind, he's three lanes away. 25 metres, I look again, he's a tiny bit ahead of me, probably 6 inches. 35 metres away, 35 metres gone out of the 50-metre race. I look across again, he's now about a foot ahead of me. And I touch the wall and guess what, he obviously beat me.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, what are you doing? Why am I looking? Because I'm not slowing him down. The only person I'm slowing down is myself. So why am I?
The hard way then, really.
Yeah. It was an international competition. It wasn't a major meet, but it was one of those little. Just going back to being a kid again, I was like, ah, you made a mistake. So I was every race or every day was constantly learning lessons.
So you wouldn't actually know that you'd won until you were there, and then you looked up. That's why there's always that looking at the time, right?
Everyone touches the wall and looks around. I knew on that occasion.
Yeah,
I knew on that occasion he beat me because I kept looking at him. because I could see he was beating me. But on the normal day, yes, you put your head down, you race to the wall.
Yeah.
And that's a good trivia quiz question for everybody. What sport finishes at a wall?
Yeah.
Only one sport, that's swimming.
Gosh.
Everyone else goes through a line.
Yeah.
And you touch the wall. And yeah, the first thing we do, obviously, to see where we came and what time we did is we turn around. We turn around for feedback, really.
God. I loved watching swimming, and it even used to give me anxiety. You know, when everybody walks on at the beginning,
yeah.
And just watching it through a screen gave me anxiety. So goodness knows how it made all of you feel. I mean, the tenseness of everything. I mean, it just makes it into like a huge moments, doesn't it? But yeah, there must be a knack to all of that as well.
I think, again, it's learning to deal with nerves, which I turn nerves into excitement.
Yeah.
The big realization I mentioned earlier about when things happen to people, you're not alone, that's happened to people before.
Yeah.
When I used to walk out to a race and I used to get excited, nervous, whatever you want to call it, you're in your own head.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, how do I deal with this? But then you kind of go, everybody else in the same boat.
Yeah.
Everybody else is nervous. They might show it in different ways. I used to be in the call room before the race. We used to go to a call room. We had to be there 15 minutes before the race to make sure for TV we were in a certain place, and then they knew it would run smoothly. And I'd be there with all my other competitors, and some had a towel over their head and you couldn't see their face. Others had headphones on and they just listened to their music. And I found my thing was, when I got nervous, I got chatty.
Yeah.
So I kind of used to poke people and trying to talk to them about, I don't know, the weather, fashion in Russia, whatever it would be. I don't know, whatever it was. But I realised it made me relaxed.
Yeah.
And it wound them up. So that became my thing. But
There's even a skill in that though, isn't there?
There was, yes.
Absolutely.
You realise who to avoid.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like learning what works for you. But the ultimate lesson is here is everybody else is going for the same stuff.
Yeah.
So I've got some friends of mine who are very successful in some very, very big roles in some very, very big industries that you'll know. You won't necessarily know them, but you'll know these big companies.
Yeah.
And they're still every day going to work going, am I going to get found out? Because in their head, they're like, really? I'm doing this and I've got this position. But inside, that little self-talk is going, how did you get here?
Yeah.
So,
it's such a privilege, isn't it? Mm. And we're all human beings at the end of the day, doing the same things and just trying to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that really leads me beautifully onto mental health then. So we've talked a little bit about how it feels in those days of swimming. How do you look after your mental health now? Because the world is sort of fractured, isn't it? And we live in such a complex, challenging time, don't we? And you've talked about social media and we've talked about perfectionism and things like that. So how do you look after your mental health? Health.
People have got around me, really. Every place is a happy place. But in general, I love playing golf.
Yeah.
I mentioned that earlier. So I try and play as much as I can, as much as the weather permits or work permits. But that's 3 or 4 hours or 5 hours on a golf course in fresh air, nature.
Yeah.
And it's one of those beautiful things and I've just got one of these brains. If I play around a golf, my last round of golf was December because I went off to California for the whole of January. So I haven't been around. And I can remember every shot. So when I go to bed at night, and people talk about counting sheeps, right? When you're a kid and they go, you can't sleep, count sheep.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4.
After 200, you're thinking, I'm still awake.
Yeah. So with golf, I get on the first tee box and I'll tee off. And the three people I play with, I'll know exactly where they hit the ball as well. And I'll go, okay, he shot there, I shot there. And then the next shot went there, next shot went there. And then I get to the next hole, and then I'm asleep. But it's a way of me going over my round again. But at the same time, that helps me relax. If I can't sleep at night, that is.
Brilliant.
But I don't know, just finding something you love, you enjoy, that would be my go-to place.
Mm.
And then just people you've got around you. I think as you get a little bit older, you realise the type of people you like around you.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, in a sporting environment, in a team environment, you kind of figure and you work out that there's certain people you connect with and get on better than others.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be friends with everybody. You haven't got enough time to be friends with everybody, but it's kind of like figuring out, you know, where you fit in and find, mentioned earlier about the tribe, is finding those like-minded people.
Yeah, I love that.
I live in Leigh-on-Sea in Essex and I had a house on the seafront. I was very fortunate and it was around lockdown and there were groups of swimmers. Well, there was one swimmer in particular when it started that got in the water and it was like Boxing Day, I think it was, or something. And freezing cold water and the Thames Estuary, the UK water is cold.
Mm.
And they kept getting in and I'm like, God, that's freezing. What's he doing? So I went out and I had a chat with him.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing? And he went, I really enjoy it. And I went, well, what's to enjoy? And he went, well, he said, I'm a massive overthinker, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But he said, when I get in the water, it teaches me a way of controlling my thoughts because all I can think about in the water is, oh my God, it's cold. Probably different words to that. Oh my God, it's cold, it's cold, it's cold. So he's concentrating on, I say staying alive, but keeping his body warm, whatever it might be, wherever he goes to with his thoughts. So I was like, oh, okay, I get that. And he said, why don't you get in? I went, not me in cold water. Then it got warmer. So I actually started going in with a few of them. And there's a group with the blue tits.
Yeah.
Blue tits, I don't know, it's about 200,000, 300,000 in the UK, and there's lots worldwide.
Huge Instagram account, yeah.
And they get in, and I saw these groups of people, 30 or 40, getting in together and doing a swim together.
Yeah.
And then I was like fascinated by, you know, why, but the why was the similar thing. It's finding like-minded people. You've got one thing in common.
Yeah.
They all came from different walks of life, from lawyers to bankers to road supers to teachers. They were so different. But they had this one thing where they came together, and by coming together and doing a swim together, they started conversation, and they were kind of like, okay, we're in this safe space where we all like doing something. So we got something in common.
Mm.
And then outside of that, it's like, well, our worlds are so different. But then they share stuff, and then they found somewhere where they felt they belonged.
And I love that too, because being a wild swimmer myself and actually being so privileged to live in Plymouth and have the sea all around and swim in the sea most days in the winter and the summer. But it is the effect that it has on your body and your nervous system physically and, as you've just said, mentally as well. So that's amazing, the feedback that you've just got. And actually, there is something about belonging and being part of a community, isn't there? So it's finding your tribe, being part of a community and thriving with that. So in recent times, mental health advocacy is a key thing. What other things are you advocating at the moment, and what do you believe in and want to make a difference in?
try and get people away from their phones would be one thing. I think phones are the bane of all evil. Although we all need them, we all use them. It's just how much you use them and which way you use them and what social platforms you sit on. But I think they're quite destructive. My whole thing would be, like, when I go to awards or I do events that I've done with the Swim Academy, I've got a dance fitness program called Fit Steps, which is a little bit like Zumba. And the Fit Steps is a dance fitness program using the 14 Latin and Ballroom dances you see on Strictly Come Dancing and creating it.
Oh, you did that as well, didn't you, Mark?
Yeah, I did Strictly Come Dancing in 2008. Very bad. Not badly, I was okay.
Did you win?
I did. I did win, yes. I got a glitter ball at home. Not. None of your listeners watched, they'll think I won, but they can think I won. No, I made it halfway. I can't lie. But from that experience, which I've really enjoyed, and you kind of go on your own little journey. And when you start, you realise it's not a level playing field. You've got people that can and can't dance. But I just enjoyed it for what it was. But from that enjoyment and realising how big the show was, I always wanted to get people fit and healthy through what I did. Yeah. Not the swimming side of it, the land work side. People call it HIIT training now, press up, star jumps, the stuff that I used to get myself fit. And I was going to put some stuff together. And then realising how big the show was, I had a word with two of the pro dancers that I got to know on the show and said, look, you can clearly dance. Can you put dance to music and create a dance fitness program? And from that little conversation and that opportunity became about 2,500 trainers across the UK that teach Fit Steps. But the whole thing with that was wanting to get people fit and healthy, realising that some people don't like swimming, biking, running, gymming. They want to move, but they enjoy dance. Mm. And I go back to finding your tribe. Predominantly they're women, but there's lots of men that do it as well. But it's kind of like one of those things of they all do different things, but they come together because they've got something in common.
Mm.
And I like dancing, and they dance together. They dance within the structure, but they move. They get the mental health benefits from it and also the physical benefits from it. So my thing is I just like helping people, whatever capacity that might be in.
And actually, a good piece of music and a bit of movement, there's nothing better, is there?
No.
So
especially if it's music you like.
What's your favourite music?
I suppose I would be slightly upset. 80s, I love 80s. I mean, the thing is, as you get older, your tastes become a little bit more varied, or you become a more tolerant of different types of music. And as a kid, you're like, no, you've got to listen to this, or you're mad, this is what it's all about. But I love 80s music and 80s pop just because it was just upbeat and happy and cheesy.
Yeah, and probably great, great memories. So you have been so privileged in terms of the experiences that you've had that you've just explained in the whole of this discussion. If you had three pieces of advice to give to our listeners, thinking from all walks of life, because we've talked about movement, we've talked about competitive sport. And when I think of Plymouth, of where I spend the majority of my time, we're really focused in just getting people moving. You know, if they're not moving, just moving is great.
Yeah.
Or if you want to spend 3 times in the gym, you know, doing lots of weights, that's great too.
Yeah.
So in terms of all that wonderful wisdom that you've gained, what would be those 3 pieces of advice?
Jackie, 3 pieces of advice. I should have thought about this beforehand. Yeah, let's think of some now. Always maintain to people, get out of your head and get into your body.
Yeah.
And you said that there, which is just move. People are sat at home, and I mentioned before earlier, which is get up first thing in the morning, or not first thing in the morning, last thing at night, whatever, just walk around the block.
Mm.
Your block might have a big block, I don't know, it might have a small block.
Yep.
Go 2 blocks, 5 blocks, whatever many blocks. Just get outside and move and get some fresh air. It's a good thing, and it actually helps people sleep at night as well. But just try and create some good habits. I mentioned about water first thing in the morning, and drink water during the day. You know, I could do 3, I used to be able to do about 10 cups of coffee a day, but I now do 2 or 3, but it's kind of like, make sure I drink enough water as well at the same time.
Yeah.
Try and create some healthy habits. One person once said to me, it was a professional golfer, first woman professional golfer ever, a lady called Vivian Saunders. She was teaching me to play golf. And one of the things she said to me was, fly with the eagles, don't peck with the hens. And I remember going, what do you mean? Fly with the eagles, don't peck with the hens. And she was basically like, surround yourself with like-minded people.
Yeah.
And I think more through luck than judgment. When I arrived at Millfield School at 13 years of age, I was very privileged to get a sports scholarship to go to Millfield. Family couldn't afford to send me there, but off I went, and I was surrounded by people better than me. I was the best 13-year-old swimmer in the world. Yes, I was very, very good, but there were 16 and 18-year-old senior swimmers on the national team that were way better than me.
Mm.
So I had people around me better than me. So I watched the way they swam, the way they dove in, the way they behaved outside the pool, and their habits, without thinking about it, became my habits. Surround yourself with like-minded people or people better than you. You rub off on each other.
Yeah.
So that's a big bit of advice. I think I mentioned earlier about the word fail. You know, never think of you're not failing at anything. You're learning something from action. I learn.
Yeah.
So every time you get up and you have a go, I did that thing last night when I said about getting people to dance.
Yeah.
And a lot of people look at me and go, no way. We're not moving. And especially the men generally. My thing is, look, just try, let go a bit. You're not John Travolta, but you know what? The more often you do something, and it's common sense, the better you become at it.
Yeah.
So don't be, oh, I'm not doing that. And all of us, when we do anything for the first time, we've got no confidence, no experience. We go, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, actually, when you've done it one time, you go, oh, okay, you're not going to be a world champion, but you get a little bit better. And it's that feedback for me, which is, someone once said to me, it was my partner years ago, we were at a restaurant, there were snails on the menu. We were reading the menu of snails. And I went, oh, they said, do you want some of them? And I went, no, they're disgusting. And they went, well, if you had them before? And I went, no, they're snails. They're disgusting.
Mm.
I mean, who likes, I mean, it's a snail. Anyway, they ordered snails. They came, they were garlic snails.
Mm.
And I ate them and I was like, oh, they're like garlic chicken. And the analogy was, well, why say you don't like something when you never tried it?
Yeah.
So try it, have a go, and then go, do you know what? It's not for me. Or just have a go. You might go, actually, it wasn't that bad. And it might become an experience or a job or something that you kind of go, this is for me. And I didn't realise it.
Mm.
Just be open-minded.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, from my hero of watching you swim and my love for swimming and watching you through a screen and having the privilege of spending a lot of time with you in the last 48 hours, we had the most amazing evening last night with the Apprenticeship Awards, celebrating all those successes and all of us listening to your really inspiring speech. And then reconvening this morning and having this discussion on the podcast.
Coffee and water, yeah, that got us through.
I've had the most amazing 48 hours. So, Mark Foster, it's been an absolute privilege to be in discussion with you this morning.
Thanks, Jackie.
And all the best, and thank you so, so much.
Pleasure, and I told you, you don't need notes, right? You just talk.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth, all rights reserved.